Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
Yeah, but we won't know which side of the debate we're taking until we flip a coin. Winner of the coin flip gets to pick which side of the debate they want to argue.
And both of us will have to argue in favor of our respective positions, whether we agree with them or not.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate. Well, here we are, Jeff. Secure 2.0, a brand new tax law, lots of provisions affecting retirement accounts. What do you think?
I think it's a lot of provisions. I think you're right. I mean, Secure Act 1.0, the OG version for those young listeners out there.
You know, I was calling it that. I wasn't calling it that. I got to admit, somebody told me, if you want to sound hip at a seminar, call Secure the OG. And I just used it at a seminar. They said, oh, he's hip. And
that, yeah, yeah. You know where that person got it from? So, yeah, that, you know, that version had like a dozen provisions and we thought it was monstrous. And admittedly, like the death of the stretch there was a bigger deal probably than any single provision of Secure Act 2.0. But Secure Act 2.0 has nearly 100 changes, so many.
All right, let's start with one. And by the on this podcast, we'll get through 90 of them probably.
All right, that's a good goal. Yeah, actually, we're going to do something a little bit different today, given the volume of the changes in the Secure Act. And we obviously want to include that in, you know, in our discussions here. We're going to break down the Secure Act in multiple episodes here. We're going to start with the RMD-related provisions. And instead of our normal pro or con, Ed, we're going to go deal or no deal. And we're going to go through all the RMD provisions. But we'll flip the coin, and you can choose. I'll flip the coin. You choose. And whatever you decide, you have to take that side for every provision. Right. So if you want deal, you got to say everything is a big deal. And
all right,
explain why. And if you want no deal, you got to explain why it's not really a big deal. All right. So let's flip the coin here. Here we go.
Remember, everybody listening, the listener, if you're listening, you're the winner. We have to say it. I know, Jeff, you tell me not to say it on each one, but we may be taking sides that you hear us in a seminar saying, never do that.
Sorry. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. All right, Ed. We're how many episodes in? I forgot to ask Zill. What would you like, heads or tails?
Heads. I have the coin here. Wait a minute. I have a real coin.
And the answer is, all right, tails. I'm going to say it's a big deal. I'm going to go big deal on this, Ed.
I knew you were going to do that because that's the opposite approach, and you're a good debater. You like the opposite side.
I like it. Yeah, give me some meat. Let me argue.
All right, so I have... You have deal, I have no deal.
Yeah, no big deal.
All right, let's start right at the beginning. The one that everybody's citing, RMDs, required minimum distributions. The age has been increased from 72 to 73 and then way later till 75. And you're going to say that's a deal.
That's a big deal. Of course it is. First off, I have to argue that. So yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, think about it. If let's say, you know, someone... Let's say average life expectancy for someone starting to take RMDs is somewhere around, you know, 88 or so, somewhere in that range, late 80s. If you live to be 72, you probably live to be about, you know, 86, 87, 88, depending upon what socioeconomic factors we want to apply in. You're talking about limiting, you know, maybe 10% now. If you go to from 72 to 75, 10% of the time you're getting rid of RMDs. Not only that, that's a big deal because we're talking another year, another 3 years potentially for some to do tax efficient Roth conversions, to have the option. Remember, the required minimum is just that. It's a minimum distribution, but we're giving now people the option for 3 more years in a decade, of course. So we've got to wait a little bit while for that. But already this year, people have another year from where they were previously. And that's 3 years for some from where it was just a few years ago when you could combine Secure Act 1, which took us from 70 and a half to 72, and Secure Act 2, which took us now from 72 to 73. So of course, that has to be a big deal.
All right. I have to say no deal on that, and especially no deal on that age 75 thing. Look at, you know, I've seen headlines. I've seen stories that say RMD age increased to 75 in 10 years. Who knows where anybody will be in 10 years? So that's not even an issue. That doesn't happen till 2033. Now, I agree with one point that you made. Sure, nobody likes to be forced to do anything. So the farther you could push back the RMD age, even if it's 1 year, that's more freedom. You have to do other things, like you said, with the Roth conversions. But 1 year, now you have to explain to everybody the transition from 72 to 73. You saw the confusion when it went from 70 and a half. And by the way, the Secure Act, that was the best single part of the whole OG Secure Act, getting rid of that half year. People didn't know what age they were. 70, am I 71? When am I 70 and a half? Which table should I use? Which age? They didn't know what they were doing. This went on for like 30 years. All right, so we got rid of that. Then it moved to 72, but you had some problems with the transition who gets 72. And we had that half year thing, if you remember. And now we have.
Now we're practiced at that, Ed. Now we know what to do. We've been through it once, right?
Yeah. All right. So now people have to see, do I get 73? All right. So here are the rules. If you're already at 72, already taking distributions, this doesn't apply to you.
No soup for you.
Yeah, no soup for you. Once you start, you can't stop. That's kind of the theme of the IRS regulations. Once RMDs start, they can't be stopped. So you don't get a break. But 1 year, after all of that, 1 year. And the other problem I have with this, it encourages people to procrastinate, to delay distributions. When you're looking at the original Secure Act gave us an ending date for the beneficiaries. Before Secure, there was the stretch IRA. Beneficiaries could go out 20, 30, 50, 80 years for a young grandchild. Now we know there's a finite, there's an end date. By 10 years after death, most beneficiaries will have to end that account. So the shorter you make the overall window, more tax is going to have to be paid. More of those distributions probably fall more, no deal, I would say, for the beneficiaries. Because the longer, say, the parents delay because the tax law says they can delay, the more income, the more of that IRA. Remember, the whole IRA or 401k has to come out by the end of 10 years after death.
You are totally right. And in fact, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that's another reason why this is a big deal. It increases the likelihood that people will experience what I've started to call the big tax crunch, which is fewer years of forced distributions plus fewer years of possible distributions means a lot more income may be compressed into a shorter amount of time.
Right,
you know, listeners to this program who are probably more proactive than most, hopefully they'll get the idea that we've got to look proactively, maybe look at Roth conversions or things like that. But a lot of people who just kind of look at the default and say, I don't have to take this. This is now further back that they're pushing those RMDs. They're going to have more tax in their lifetime. And as you talked about, Ed, they're going to have a lot more tax potentially for their heirs because we're taking what used to be starting at 7.5. We're making that somewhere between 3, 4, 5 years for some shorter of forced distributions during life. And we're taking what was decades and we're shortening it down to 10 years for most after death. That's a big deal.
And wouldn't you agree that most people, if they hear the word minimum, everybody likes, it's such a popular provision. Congress loves it. People, they say, oh, good, I don't have to do it. But you're just creating a huge tax bill at some point during your lifetime and the beneficiaries. So I think it encourages people to delay distributions when maybe they should take more out while rates are low now in 23, 24, 25 and get that out. But another.
No, you agree. It's a big deal then.
No, it's not a big deal. The reason it's not a big deal, another big reason I'll give you, because it only affects maybe 20% of the people. Under the Treasury's own statistics, 80% of the people take more that are subject to RMDs, take more than the amount because they need the money. So telling them, well, if you need the money, you don't have to take it. Well, I need the money. So it
that's only- true. That's true. And that was before when it was 70 and a half.
Yeah, that was true.
And certainly more people take it now voluntarily and before a bear market in 2022 that, you know, probably hurt some people's finances as well. Yeah.
So it only helps the people that don't need the money. They can delay. But like I just said, if they delay, they're probably the ones going to get hit with a bigger tax bill, them and their beneficiaries. We have other provisions. Anyway, that's our deal or no deal on RMDs. What about deal or no deal on the 50, former 50%, one of the biggest penalties in the tax code, the 50%, I said former, the 50% penalty for not taking an RMD, one of the harshest provisions in the whole tax code. And now it's gone. It's gone and replaced with a 25% penalty. Oh, what a deal. And even 10% if you make up the misdistribution. I call no deal on that. But do you want me to tell you why first? Or you want to say why it's a big deal?
I'll say why it's a big deal. I mean, you just said it's one of the biggest biggest penalties in the tax code. If it's going from 50 down to 10, I mean, that's a reduction of 80%. I mean, that quantitatively, that has to be a big deal, right?
All right, I'll cut you down on that. I'd rather pay 50% of nothing than 10% of something. I may be a little cynical here, but as you would agree, I know you would agree, almost nobody ever paid the 50% penalty. If you had the dog ate my homework, whatever you said, that penalty, IRS was very generous and liberal waiving the penalty. I worry at 10% now, will they be as generous? Will more people end up paying 10% now? So it behooves every advisor and everybody watching this to make sure you take your RMD. So I say it's no deal only because you could end up with a higher penalty than you would have had under the 50% regime.
Well, I think that's a good point, Ed. But one of the other provisions of the SECURE Act that we can talk about related to RMDs is the fact that they're looking to shift how they provide relief about this penalty in general. So I don't know if they were going to be shifting the way they give relief to something called EPCRs, which is just an obnoxious acronym for Employee Plans Compliance Resolution System. Traditionally, this was reserved for if a 401k or a 403b or similar type of plan made a boo-boo, right? And it was about to lose its qualified tax preference status. You could go to the IRS, do a mea culpa, ask how you should fix, you know, what step you should take to rectify your plan. And the IRS would tell you, and you did it, and they blessed it, and they said, okay, you're good. You're back in our good graces. Well, they're now going to apply the same group to RMD forgiveness. And I wonder if that group will be as beneficial. So without a change from the 50% to the 10%, maybe that group would just say, you know what, you're paying 50%. And not only that, Ed, I believe very recently, you know, the IRS got a big infusion of cash, something like $80 billion above and beyond what was their normal funding. And
yeah, let me stop you there. I doubt any of that was directed to RMD relief.
Well, I think a little bit of it is going to go to modernize.
Maybe like $5-$10.
Well, you know what? They're going to modernize their systems. And modernizing their systems might make it easy. You know, the IRS knows how old you are. They have your Social Security number.
I always said that. They're one keystroke away from knowing everything.
That's right. And so if they were one keystroke, if they actually modernized their system, you know, right now, I think my pocket calculator that I used in sixth grade has more power than the IRS computers. If they actually go ahead and use some of that money to modernize their systems, maybe they're actually able to pull that and match 1099Rs and start asking questions. You know, I think it's something like 80% of the audits today are done as correspondence audits, right, where they basically send you a question in the mail and say, prove it. And, you know, maybe we see more of those correspondence audits popping up soon where they say, hey, you're 74. We see that you have a 5498, which the IRS already has, saying what your fair market value is. You know your RMD age. Why didn't you take enough? It wouldn't take a particularly powerful computer system to be able to identify
that.
Not
only that, there's a checkbox on the form. It says subject to RMDs.
It's almost like they have all the information there. So I think this could be a big deal if we do see those systems modernized and we do see more people having. The other reason why it's a big deal, Ed, is just the numbers game, right? Like we talk about 10,000 baby boomers turning or retiring every year. But the reality is that's kind of an average over the baby boomer demographic. It started with 5,000 and 6,000, but now we're kind of seeing the crest of that wave. So more people are going to be coming into RMD age than we have ever had in the history of the country. And so just if we just extrapolate out the amount of people who make mistakes today, based on how many people there are today versus the amount of, like, even if it's on a relatively constant basis, that's a heck of a lot more people having a heck of a lot more mistakes that now, at worst, they will see 25 or 10% if they timely fix it.
So, including beneficiaries, and their RMDs are very complicated with the 10-year rule. So we'll have to see. That EPCRS, that correction system, we won't know. IRS, according to this law, has 2 years to write the rules on that and the guidance. But let's move on while we're talking to about RMDs. Deal or no deal, the QCD, Qualified Charitable Distributions. The change there is the $100,000 is the limit, what you can do per person, not per IRA, per person per year for IRA owners who are 70 and a half years old or older, or IRA beneficiaries have to be 70 and a half, even though the age, the RMD age is now 73 and maybe one day 75. It's still a 70 and a half age, and it's only for IRAs, just to make that clear. So the $100,000, I always thought that was enough for most people. How many people give that much? But apparently it wasn't. So that's going to be indexed for inflation. So that's one thing. I don't think it's a big deal, because I don't think, unless you have the heavy hitters, I don't think that's going to make that much of a difference. And then the other provision, a one-time $50,000 QCD to split interest in entities like charitable gift annuities or charitable remainder trust. I don't think that's a big deal, because it's only $50,000. You're going to set up a whole trust and the whole infrastructure on that for one item. So I that's my no big deal on that. Why do you say it's a big deal?
No, this one's tough, Ed.
I know.
I almost want to concede, but I can't do that. My pride won't let me do it. I have to argue that it's a big deal. I guess I'm going to go with a big deal because people have been asking for a long time, can we allow our QCDs to be made to other types of charitable organizations? And the big one that people have asked for is, can I put this into my donor advised fund? And now the law, just to be clear, Secure Act 2.0 does not do that. Right. Donor advised funds are still not allowed, but maybe this cracks the door a little bit. So I'm going to say big deal, because maybe this is the first crack in Congress's position that this money has to go right to charity directly, immediately, and exclusively. The split interest you're talking about, you know, these things are, this allows you to still benefit a portion of those dollars, but also still have charity benefit. And I think the biggest deal there is going to be on the charitable gift annuities. The charitable remainder trust and the charitable remainder, the unit trust and the annuity trust, I think,
you have to concede on that.
I got nothing. I mean, I can't, it's hard to imagine a scenario where I could do that. But the charitable gift annuity, you know, the big difference is no setup cost in general, right? Because the charity is typically operating that. And you have no ongoing costs like you would have with an ongoing trust, with the trust tax return, et cetera. So the charitable gift annuity is a great way for someone to still benefit in part from the dollars that they had in their IRA, but support their charitable endeavor. So I think that could be a big deal. If I have to go with one, I'm going to go with that. And again, I think the biggest thing is this is the first crack in that kind
That's
of,
true.
You know.
That's true. All right, one more item.
All right, one more.
QLACs, Qualified Longevity Annuity Contract.
No, big deal, Ed, big deal.
I would agree. It's a big deal. These are longevity annuities where they kick in generally 85. And the idea of them is great, that, you know, you hit 85, you're not out of money, and whatever amount you apportion to that within your IRA comes off the amount that's used to calculate the RMD, so it can lower your RMD. Here's why I say no big deal. I mean, it is a big deal. They just raised it. They got rid of the 25% limitation. Great. And they raise it to 200,000. That's a big deal. Here's why I say no big deal. Nobody uses it. I don't see anybody who uses it. We were at one of our training programs, and we have hundreds of advisors that are really into this stuff. I said, how many of you are using the QLACs? And not even one hand. I don't know why. I think the idea is good. So that's why I say no big deal on this.
Yeah, you know, it is one of those things where it even has a name, the annuity paradox, where academically, these types of annuities, and Ed, we should just make clear, you and I are CPAs. Neither one of us has an insurance license.
Oh, right.
And you know, you don't do anything in terms of advising, and I work for a fee only RIA. We don't take commission. So we are like your poster childs or poster children, for the people who are supposed to hate anything called annuities. But the reality is we are fact-based, right? We're evidence-driven human beings first and foremost, and the evidence supports income style annuities, longevity annuities. Now, there's there's a famous ad out there, Ed. I hate annuities and you should too. And I don't hate annuities.
I have them myself.
I know. But you know what? I hate the word annuity, and I think you should too, because the word annuity means so many different things. In some cases, it's very high fee products that allow you to invest but take your money back over time. In some cases, it's almost like a CD offered by an insurance company, so-called MIGAs, multi-year.
I have those.
Right. And then in other cases, we're talking about these income style annuities. And so I think the problem is when people hear annuity, they just shut down because they've heard all these quote unquote bad things or terrible things. And the reality is, like most things, there are good products and bad products. And more importantly, good things for you and bad things for you. And from an academic perspective, these so-called income and particularly longevity annuities that don't start income until much later in life, but because they're not starting until much later in life, tend to provide much higher levels of guaranteed income for that remainder period, are shown as one of the best, if not the best way, to mitigate longevity risk. And Ed, you know as well as I do, most people, when they walk into an office of an advisor or a tax professional, like their biggest risk is biggest concern is I don't want to run out of money before I run out of life. And so if that's your biggest concern, you should start, not to say that you should run out and buy these things right away, but you should at least explore the things that are most likely to help you manage your biggest risk.
And that would include QLACs. I'm trying to get you back from this negative thing you just did to this is a big deal. You're supposed to be on the big deal side.
It's a big deal because they're helpful in this regard.
Great products.
Yeah.
I'm saying no big deal because nobody uses it, even though I think we agree they should.
Well, after listening to this, Ed, everybody's going to be out there thinking about them. So,
well, 200,000 now.
Big deal.
See? All right. That's it for our RMD deal or no deal section of Secure 2.0. But there's lots of other provisions we'll cover in future episodes.
Yeah, certainly. We've got Roth-related provisions and a ton more. Remember, there are almost 100 provisions in this. So, Ed, you know, like we always say, you know, there are two sides to every coin. Today, our two sides were deal or no deal. But, you know, your retirement and your decisions are too important to leave up to a coin flip. And that's why the one thing Ed and I always agree on is making sure that you run by any big decision with a knowledgeable financial advisor or tax professional so that you can weigh the pros and the cons or whether something for you is a deal or no deal against your specific set of goals and objectives. If you'd like to continue the discussion with Ed and I, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to Ed using the handle @TheSlotReport on Twitter. That's @TheSlot with 2 T's report on Twitter, or myself on Twitter @CPAPlanner. Again, that's @CPAPlanner. Ed, this was fun, but I know we've got a lot left, right?
Yeah, we still have more provisions on 2.0 coming up in our deal or no deal on Secure 2.0.
All right, so we'll see you next time on The Great Retirement Debate.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer for Buckingham Wealth Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed in corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Buckingham Wealth Partners.